are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Mm-hmm. Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and we're also heard online on the World Wide Web.
Yes, we are on 1510wwbc.com. You can listen to us live. You just hit that listen live button. Or if you're catching an archive of the show, you can just click the on demand and pick the date. Also, after each one of the shows, we put our all of our correspondence right on our Facebook page and also on the website, cedamediainc.com. And fantastic guests, not just at the beginning of the year, but now we've got some fantastic guests today. I'm excited, Sita.
That's right. So on Mondays, this studio here in Cocoa, Florida has become part of my life, part of Ellen O'Neill's life. Samantha co-hosts with us sometimes, Samantha Nazario. She's not here today, but Ellen is back in her chair. And we speak to people here in Brevard County, Florida. We speak to people in the state of Florida, around the world, around, I must say, in all 50 states. We've had people called in from all countries. And we speak about kitchen table topics, things that are important to people. From the minute you wake up to the minute you go to bed, everyone wants the same thing. They want food, water, shelter, health insurance, security. People want to be safe.
That's right.
They want to be secure. It doesn't matter if you're black, white, Muslim, Hindu, Christian, whatever you are, we deserve a chance and an opportunity to survive. And so our show is more like, I think it's a variety of things we speak about.
Yes.
Whether it's financial literacy, whether we're speaking to an author that had an aha moment to write about a childhood past, Holocaust, whatever it is, we
folks
speak
that decide to
people.
Run for office, which we have
right.
total respect for. And no matter what you're running for, we're total respect for your throwing your hat in the ring.
Right. And so today is no different, right? I have two great guests today. My first guest this morning is Angel Perry, and she is a candidate for, you said, this state representative, District 50.
Exactly.
Which includes part of Brevard. And so we'll be speaking to her in a minute. She is paying for her segment, which is the first segment. And then the second segment, I'm speaking to a woman, an award-winning journalist, an author, an advocate. Her name is Pat LaMarche. And boy, I looked up Pat's online, her website, and she's amazing as well.
Well, and it's been a while, but she was on the show early on. We had her on the show at one point.
I don't remember. But
I know.
But Angel Perry, she and I have been friends. You know, I make a lot of really good friends on Facebook. And Angel is one of those friends that I contacted. And I said, would you like to call in on our show? And, you know, we do have Democrats and Republicans that come on our show.
Yes.
And Angel is a Republican. Mm-hmm. But I want people to know that Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we are very fair and we are balanced on this show, and we give everyone equal opportunity to speak about why they're running for office.
So, and it's about education, just like we have the Women League of Voters that come on quite a bit, because they're right. They just present the facts.
That's
what we want to do, is just present the facts and get people engaged and certainly involved in
right.
making
and,
sure that they're
Angel
supporting.
And Angel Perry is the type of leader that House 50 needs. After reading her website and speaking with her, I am very, very delighted to have her on our show. And thank you for calling in, Angel. I know you're on the phone.
Oh, yes, I am. Thank you, Sita, for having me today. I'm very, very honored that you would put some time aside for me so we can talk.
Well, girl, so many wonderful things happening today. I was very, very pleased this morning while I was at the gym to find out that they're going to be voting on Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson today, and she does have support from Republicans and Democrats, and so that made me happy. And then, of course, my mind ran on you because you are the kind of person that that if elected to that seat, you are a person that reaches out to people on both sides as well. And you've demonstrated that based on the fact that you've done so many things in your life. So I'm going to let you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, Angel Perry.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. So I am originally from New York, like a lot of people that live here in Florida now. They transfer from somewhere else looking for a better life, you know, freedoms. Being from New York, just some of the things I saw, I didn't see me agreeing with. And I just then decided to move to a state that seemed to be more aligned in, you know, how people lived, what people thought, and access for the everyday person to influence and have a voice with local government. So with that, you know, some of my background is half of the year, you know, I would be in a Christian school. I went to private school growing up. And during the summers, different members of my family either had farms or were out in the country. So, you know, some of the old school traditions of family life was, you know, fishing, hunting, learning different survival trades, respect for, you know, animals and nature, just enjoying the country and learning about the environment and different peoples, different cultures, you know, between the city and urban life and rural and farm life. You know, I had a very rich childhood as far as exposure and education.
That's right. So and you've also demonstrated throughout your life, Angel Perry, that you you advocate for workers. You went toe-to-toe with corporate America. And you are a no-nonsense kind of gal.
Yes. So the background with that is, you know, my parents were union employees for the state of New York. So when it was time to, you know, negotiate contracts, I learned firsthand as a little girl holding my parents' hand, you know, you made the sandwiches for your coworkers. It was very family-oriented. You didn't cross the picket line. You know, we were negotiating with the city to make sure all the employees had what they needed for the next contract. So when I moved down here in Florida, I spent almost 4 years teaching about civics, education, the government system, and the rights as an employee. When you work, you know, just because the employer is the boss doesn't mean that you have no rights. Like, they're not allowed to abuse you. They're not allowed to just not pay you for a time you worked and those things. And a lot of people did not know that took my classes.
Yeah. And you also, you took additional training in 2015 to be a delegate for the AFL-CIO as well.
Yes, I am currently an AFL-CIO delegate. The political part of it, I, you know, recused myself just because, you know, having influence on those that are getting supported for their elections, you know, it just, for me, a personal conflict. If I'm also a candidate and then I'm sitting in on decisions on whether, you know, hundreds of thousands of voters will support you. So, you know, I'm staying out of it this election season because I am a candidate myself.
Right. So talk to our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. You're one of three Republicans who are running to represent House District 50 in Orange County, which also includes part of Brevard County, Florida. So what is your 30-second speech when you meet someone? Why are you the best candidate out of all three?
So as I mentioned some of my background, currently, as a labor advocate in Central Florida, this is not new to the Republican Party. Republican Party has always been advocate of the people for freedoms and opportunity. And I bring old school Reagan beliefs, old school Lincoln beliefs, all of those combined beliefs. And I am actively doing that now out of my office, which can be found on Edgewater. besides the people that I represent, which we represent about 20 contracts at Communication Workers of America, Local 3108, I've expanded my office. This is my second term. I'm executive vice president to the general public. So if someone knows me or is referred to me and they need assistance with small business, I've helped many small businesses over COVID, just, you know, trying to navigate all the complexities of different applications and, you know, just getting, you know, compliant with all these new rules that kept changing back and forth. I can tell all the voters and the residents of Florida and Central Florida that I am doing the work already, and I'm not even paid for it.
That's right.
You know, I
well, that's what attracted me to you, because I saw, you know, what you were doing for people and representing them in the unions, and you've done your homework. I mean, you've been an advocate for so long for so many different things, and so I said, wow, when she's running for office, let me find out a little bit about her. Now, what kind, are you having any issues with the African-American communities taking a look at you as a candidate, or do you find people crossing party lines to support you? Because you're making people proud as an African-American running for that seat as well. I'm not sure. I don't know the person who was in that seat before, but I've heard good things about you. So are you reaching out in all communities of color, being an African-American yourself?
So, again, being multicultural experience growing up, I am very comfortable in the room, no matter the ethnic group, no matter if, you know, the group is immigrant or Native or Native to Florida. All people that I've gotten to meet as I'm meeting and learning about different constituents and families and social issues, economic issues, everybody's been welcoming. And being from such a diverse background, people don't have to over-explain themselves to me about anything. I'm not confused. I'm not having to dig in an iPad to try to research anything. A lot of common cultures that we see here in Florida are very familiar to me already. So I get invited to a lot of different circles, whether, you know, economically they are well off, middle class, or, you know, economically challenged, or even, you know, in some circumstances, depending on the help that they need. There are people that, you know, have challenges with law and they're trying to get their life back together. You know, I am open to help everybody. That is my passion, is to make today better than yesterday, and we all move forward together.
Right. And that's what I like about you, is you're not going to get yourself in a situation where people are going to view you as a person who's only in it for one set of people. You're diverse, and you're reaching out to people from all economic, social, and cultural backgrounds, which is, to me, it's wonderful. You just got an endorsement by the CWA. So tell our listeners a little bit about your endorsement.
So Communication Workers of America is one of the largest and oldest unions in the United States of America. It was established in 1935. It's upwards of over 750,000 members strong in all different types of trades, majorly through telecom. So building out, you know, your internet, your telephone, but they also cover different school staff groups. Some correction officers are in that circle, and newly acquired are some of the Google employees. Mm-hmm. So it is a very diverse trade that we cover.
That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so proud of you. So, Ellen, you know, I'm not sure if you Googled Angel Perry, but if you look at all the stuff she's done, and I mean, it's almost like she's, you know what, Angel, when I think about you, I feel like you've already been a politician, because you've been doing so much for people from every walk of life since you were a little girl, volunteering with your dad and mom in New York to what you're doing in Florida. And I think it's amazing that there are such good role models for you as well. They've instilled such awesome values in you that you have that compassion for others. And you also have your faith, which guides you and feeds you and sustains you. And you've put all that into your life, which is it's just phenomenal. So broadly speaking, what are the primary reasons that you decided to run for office?
Broadly speaking, I saw a need to get back to a type of an American first ideal. Growing up, we didn't look at our neighbors as enemies. We didn't say, well, you don't believe what I believe. You don't dress the way I dress. And I am not sure where the rift started. I really don't care. I am here to create the bonds that are missing that we should have had all along, but for whatever reason, people decided to camp out, and I'm here to show them you don't have to create a war scenario in order to disagree with somebody. You know, being someone's friend or acquaintance or accepting somebody isn't the same as agreeing with them. It's a brand new day, and this country cannot be strong if we're battling each other. We have to protect each other. We have to care for one another. We're Americans. It can't be the greatest country if you're ready to do battle with your neighbor. It's ridiculous.
Right. So what you're saying is people need to sit down, agree to disagree respectfully and peacefully, and enough with the hate and division and the fear.
Correct.
I hear you, girl, and I'm just that's why I'm a moderate person and I'm open-minded. I like to listen to both sides and come up with a solution. So we've had a lot of people in our state who are saying that they would like to see Medicaid expanded. What are your thoughts on expanding Medicaid for those who cannot write a check for insurance, does not qualify for Medicaid, and they're just caught in that little gap?
So this is where I stand on a lot of legal policy. So I spend a lot of time actually reading, you know, laws as they're written in the notes. This may be just why I decided to run as well. When you have talking points and sound bites, it sounds amazing. But when you actually read a law and how it's written and the rules, it turns into a nightmare a lot of times. So I don't have an answer for that, whether I'm for or against it, without a actual, you know, bill in front of me to say this is what's going in it. And I'll always stand on that. It has to show that it is something beneficial, because a sound bite isn't the same as a bill. It's just not.
So you want to do your research?
That is correct.
Right. I understand that. And I think most people would as well, because you don't want to say something and then later on be held responsible because you didn't do what you said on your platform, which a lot of politicians do have sound bites and code words. And they say things like, I remember that a lot of us were very upset with some of the Democrats who could not message the word defund and socialist properly, when we all know you don't defund the police, you give them the resource, you know. So I think you're right about messaging. So there must have been key issues that you saw happening in our state, and you said to yourself, I am going to run for District 50. Were there some issues that you saw in your district? Because your district is part of our district here in Brevard as well, and I'm sure our listeners would like to know, what are some of the key issues that you have in mind to help or fix?
Well, so some of the things that were issues originally was the whole mandate that came from the White House down to the state level with mask and shutdown. And I do have to just applaud our governor for finding a way to stand up to keep us open. The suffering of the other state, in comparison, and we'll just say New York because that's my origin state, they're suffering so bad that the mayor's backtracking on, you know, in the city there, who's backtracking on who's allowed to play in a sport or a concert, because he kept the shutdown. If you're not you know, immunized by, you know, the COVID-19 vaccine, then you can't do your job. And then he's finding how many people are suffering and hurting. There has to be a balance. And here in Florida, we were able to voice our opinion and create a balance through a lot of it. Other things is healthcare. COVID-19 has exposed a lot of gaps in our system, which, you know, needs to be worked through. I don't have all the answers, but I'm willing to look at all the evidence and put in what the people actually need on paper.
Right, right. And I see, you know, like right now we have a lot of chatter in the state of Florida about the parental bill of rights, I should say, that Governor DeSantis just signed. And some people are calling it the Don't Say Gay bill, and some people are calling it the parental rights bill, and it's affecting education. Now, where I stand on things like that is we have to be age appropriate when we speak to each other, to children, and we have to know when and how the tone, parents, grandparents, aunts, cousins, that's where we come in handy to help raise our children. Now, where do you stand on issues with education, for example, with what we're seeing going on with our schools? We've got so many groups that are competing with each other, saying that they're helping our children. But the ultimate responsibility to educate our children and teach them are parents and mentors and the community. Where do you stand on all of that with this bill that the governor just signed?
So parents absolutely should have the final say. It's their kids. I think with some of the charter programs, a lot of communities have that option to take their kids to an establishment that's going to be aligned with their teaching. Now, with public schools, you know, we have such a shortage of teachers, for one. And then some of the boards just don't seem to be communicating between the board, the teachers, and the parents. So there seems to be a huge disconnect. Now, that bill that, you know, has been labeled Don't Say Gay, when I read it, all it does is it's establishing age-appropriate lessons. So there's no lessons now that from third grade to second grade to first grade to kindergarten that there's any sex education to begin with. So having a bill just say out loud what traditionally has already been happening, I'm struggling to find a problem with that.
Right,
now,
right.
I do understand that, again, when you have a soundbite like Don't Say Gay, it makes it seem like one thing. And, you know, some legislators take advantage of the general public not reading the bills. The governor is signing something that he firmly believes is protecting the children. And again, if sex education is not until after third grade, what's the problem?
Right. And like you say, you know, like I grew up in a house with, you know, we had 18 brothers and sisters, and a lot of our education came from our parents. My parents would say, you go to school to learn to read and write and become somebody. And certain things they would say was not age appropriate. But of course, correct, we live in a country in the United States where it's very different. You have children, you know, from single parents, children who does have gay parents. You have the traditional family as well as non-traditional. And I understand, but a lot of parents are thrilled because this bill gives the parents more oversight and control over the classroom and their children. So, and I do know if something happens, we still have something in place where parents who feel discriminated against or their children are being harassed, they can still file a complaint with the public school. So thank you for letting us know what you feel about that. So before we wrap up the segment, Ellen wanted to say that your segment is...
Yeah, your segment is being paid for by the Angel Perry for Florida State House in District 50 by her campaign. So, and thank you so much for joining us and giving us your insights on your campaign and what you're doing. Don't forget that you can go to angelforflorida.com and contribute and become an active supporter for the Angel Perry for Florida State House
right
campaign.
And Angel, before you go, I have friends here in Brevard who are interested in learning about your candidacy as well. So what are your long-term vision for Brevard County, Florida?
My long-term goal is to make sure that, you know, Brevard County, Orange County, all have what they need and that the legislative is representing them and not just assuming that because I'm elected that I'm the smartest person in the room. It's a partnership. It absolutely means that I'm the voice of the voters, not just my voice.
And what are the biggest challenges you see right now in District 50 and how do you plan to address it?
A lot of concern is making sure there's more police presence. I did, you know, do a survey. Healthcare is a big concern as well. And small businesses surviving after COVID is going to be key to making sure that we're successful.
Right. And you do know we have issues with the Indian River Lagoon here. Do you have any plans in place to help us here with the Indian River Lagoon?
So besides the Indian River Lagoon, the waterways and water in general seems to be one of the big topics that have been brought to my attention. So that's going to take a little more, you know, visiting sites, visiting constituents to gather all the information to make sure we have clean water, absolutely have clean water, and protect our wildlife. So that's going to be one of the key things that drives me to Tallahassee as well.
So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Angel Perry. She is a candidate for District 50 here in Florida, and she is one of three Republicans who are running. So, Angel, what do you see your role if elected as state representative? I mean, many people have a role to play, right? So, what would you say would be your role as a state rep to represent District 50?
Majority of my role is going to be resources. Most people, you know, they understand that legislative creates the bills and have a law, but the other part of the job is that you're advocating for funding for your district. The important thing is to make sure that I'm advocating in a voice to make sure the roads are, you know, paved well, any bridges are repaired. You know, a lot of neighborhoods want to keep the integrity of the family neighborhood. And a lot of companies from outside the country, you know, tend to try and purchase stuff and, you know, they disrupt, you know, the integrity of family neighborhoods. And I've been told on numerous occasions that is important to the residents of Orange and Brevard County. So we want to have progress in building and making small business survive and things look good, but keeping the integrity of neighborhoods seems to be a key that I've been informed about. And so also protecting our first responders has also come across, you know, my campaign, making sure firefighters and police officers, EMTs, 911 operators are all addressed in these areas. Safety is also a concern of the constituents that I've come across. So I have a going list, and, you know, I'm okay with all of it. The task is not unfamiliar, so I am ready to go. Once I'm sworn in, I will hit the ground running to make sure I'm advocating for funding for my district and that all the things that are important to us as Americans, as people of Florida, is addressed.
Right. And also, you know, most people, they want the opportunities and they want people to address what's going on in their zip codes. We've heard
Correct.
So many people that say they want to keep a community school, and politicians talk about this all the time. But when you have a community school, the community school is as good as the people that live in the community. So that community needs businesses. They need proper sidewalks. They need
Right.
housing. They need health care. They need mental care addressed. They need functioning traffic lights. All the communities need to treat their citizens with respect. In order for the community school to function, you have to respect the community, the people, the teachers. So I think a lot of politicians, you know, they talk about these things, but this is an issue that all of us need to be looking at, that all zip codes should be treated the same. Are you there?
Yeah. Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, yes. Do you agree with that?
So I'm going to just... The communities need to be listened to equally, absolutely. All those things that you have mentioned absolutely have to be addressed. I will agree with that. Where the sameness is, every neighborhood is not going to have the same need. So if one neighborhood has a red light that's out and another neighborhood needs clean water, you know, I'm not going to blanket say everybody's getting the same thing. So I think very literal and logical. So the needs of the individual zip codes have to be addressed, yes. The attention equally addressed. So that I will say.
Yes. Okay. So, well, you know, before we wrap up, give us your website, because I know people would be interested in volunteering, maybe donating to your campaign, reading a little bit about you. Give us the website one more time.
My campaign website is Angel, A-N-G-E-L, the number 4, Florida, altogether.com. AngelForFlorida.com.
And I know we have to wrap up the segment, Angel Perry, but I really appreciate you taking the time to call in. And I'm going to give you 30 seconds to give your elevator speech to those who are listening, why you are uniquely qualified to be the next state representative, Republican, for House District 50.
Me being qualified and uniquely qualified, I bring with me the experience of doing the work already. I already serve several thousand constituents here in the state of Florida as an unelected official, unpaid official. That is my volunteer time. I implore you to consider let me expand my work that I do already. I'm already doing it because I'm passionate to help others and make sure today is better than yesterday, and today is the stepping stone to make a better tomorrow.
That's fantastic. And beautiful. All of the listeners that are listening in, make sure, this is one of the things that we always talk about on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, stay involved. Get in touch with Angel Perry. If you have questions, if you have concerns, get in touch with her now so that way you guys can start discussing what goes on, as you should with every representative that you have. But we have to take a quick commercial break and listen to our sponsors. Angel Perry, thank you so much for calling in. We're going to listen to our sponsors real quick. We'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Hey, Angel, thank you so much for calling in.
I appreciate you. Thank you.
I think you did pretty good, girl, and I think you got all your points in as well. Yeah, I would love to have you on again. When is your election? Is in November, correct?
Years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County and Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud 9, that's Cloud 9 furniture.com. again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast Urgent Care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MedFast, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. What a fantastic first segment, Ellen. That was great.
It was. And I love meeting, especially the folks that are running maybe for the first time. But there's a perfect example. Angel Perry has been doing the work her entire life. She's been with her family doing the work. Whether she was actually in office or not, it didn't matter to
her.
She's
the type
of
leader that we need. We need. She really is. She's been an advocate. Yeah, so this second segment for our listeners who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, my friend Pat LaMarsh is calling in. She is a journalist, an award-winning broadcaster, and a critically acclaimed author. She spent her adult life working for social change, leading to her run in 2004 as a Green Party vice presidential candidate. During the campaign, Pat devoted her time to staying in, visiting, and discussing lots of situations. And one of those was the homeless, which we've had so many people on our show talking about the homeless crisis
yeah,
here in Brevard and everywhere else. So frequently, that is a topic that everybody's talking about. She was recently featured in MS Magazine and for all her efforts to destigmatize poverty. So I'm just going to say hello, Pat, and thank you for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Well, Sita, I'm such a fan. Thank you so much for having me.
You're awesome. I mean, we've been friends for so long, and I've been trying to get you on this show forever. And thank God we finally did it, right?
Yay. Yeah, I'm really happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
So you're an award-winning journalist, broadcaster. You also ran for office, and I know there's more things that you've done. Talk to our listeners and tell them a little bit about why did you decide to run for office in 2004 as well? That's fascinating.
Well, I'm basically, I hail out of the state of Maine, which has a history of having, I don't know if the radical is the right word, but certainly causing radical change. In fact, Hannibal Hamlin, who was Abraham Lincoln's first vice president, was a governor of Maine. And he was chosen to be Lincoln's vice president because of his brave stand against slavery. And so he was a governor of Maine turned vice president, and I was a gubernatorial candidate for Maine turned vice presidential candidate. So in 2004, I ran for vice president of the United States. I did know that I wasn't going to win. There are all kinds of ballot access reasons why little parties run in big races, mostly because the states require that you have someone at the top of the ticket or they won't allow the political party to exist in that state, which is very restrictive. But I didn't want to waste a year of my life running for office, an office I couldn't get. So I decided that I would stay in homeless shelters and be in homeless situations across the country to try and highlight the people I care about, who are veterans, the elderly, mommies, daddies, babies, families, teens, unaccompanied youth, all the people that that comprise the folks unhoused in our country, millions of people.
Well, you know, so many people speak about leaving a good footprint behind for their grandchildren and the next generation, but you're actually doing it, and I really applaud you for it, because a lot of people talk about leaving the planet a better place than we found it, and they don't do it. So you are taking the time to do that for your beautiful grandchildren, Ronan and Maggie, and it's amazing. And so you started doing this, going to the homeless shelters and speaking to people as part of your journalism, or you just that something in you that you said, this is a topic that needs to be destigmatized?
Well, I come from a family of Irish immigrants. And so, you know, the Irish fled Ireland because of famine. And so my mom, I used to tease my mom that you couldn't have a decent plate of mashed potatoes in her house without hearing about someone who was hungry, you know, and just trying to enjoy your mashed potatoes.
My co-host Ellen has some Irish in her, and
100%.
She's laughing, and she's laughing because she lived
through
that.
We come from the same family.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's the great thing about, you know, about having these cultural similarities.
Yeah.
You know, we can identify with each other. And then, of course, we can identify with all the immigrants if we pay attention, because everybody has, most people, I should say, were fleeing some sort of oppression when they went to a place that was frightening, new, that they weren't aware of, but it was better than what they knew they were going to live with at their own home. And in the case of my grandmother, she had to choose between hunger and loneliness. She had to choose between hunger and leaving her family behind. And I cannot imagine what a horrible choice that was for her. So all of our lives, we were brought up to care about other people and to think about people who didn't have what we had. And so I kind of started years and years and years before I became political, when I was just in the media, I would cook dinner once a month for a local homeless shelter. And I was a single mom, so I didn't have any money. And so my mom would pay for the food. She would pay for the food, and I would cook it and drop it off. And we did that for years and years and years. And so when I did run for vice president in a race I knew I would lose, I didn't want to waste my time. I wanted to point out things that were important. And it gave me the opportunity to do that. But because I was a journalist, I kept a notebook on my trip. And when I came home, I wrote a book about the people I met. It's literally just a book of the people I came in contact with and what their stories were, which is what I did for a living, right, was tell other people's stories. So that book was read by a man who ran a shelter in Central Pennsylvania, and he called me and offered me a job and said, you need to come work. Your heart is here. You need to be here doing this work. And I ended up running shelters for the better part of 10 years.
Wow. I like how you say you ran for office you knew you couldn't win. But the thing is, at least you did it because you knew that it was a stepping stone to bring, you know, awareness to the plight of the people you were finding on your journey towards trying to become elected. It's amazing that you did it anyways. But, you know, I'm glad you touched on the immigrants, and because I've been an immigrant myself, a naturalized citizen. I love this country and I give it my 100%, and I'm so grateful to God that I'm here and I have a voice. But you're right. People flee. No one wakes up in the country of their birth and says, today I'm going to flee. I'm going to take what's on my back. I'm going to take my young babies and I'm going to trek miles and miles through the wilderness, or try to swim across, or try to get beaten by guards because I just want to break the law. People just don't wake up and say that. They say, I'm fleeing because there's drugs and there's violence and there's horrible governments and the environment is bad and there's war. So people flee, whether it's on the southern border or in Europe, they flee because they want a better life. They want an opportunity for themselves or their children. And I'm so glad that your grandmother instilled that in you, because that's what I see as well when I see people fleeing and begging to come in and asking for asylum, you know?
Yes. When I went to Ireland, I ended up going to graduate school in Europe. And when I went to Ireland and stood on a famine cemetery, which is just a mass grave, right? It's just so many people dying of starvation so fast that they're all buried at once in one grave. And I stood on that famine cemetery and realized that that was my grandmother's choosing. What do I stay here and have this be my fate, or do I never see my mother again? And those were her choices in the very early 1900s. And she was so courageous, but her heart was broken her whole life. Her heart was broken because
She had to leave.
She had to make that choice.
Yes, yeah. Yes. So yeah. you write about the numbers in the United States, you said, for homelessness is off by 80%. Expand on that for us.
Well, so we have a couple of different agencies that deal with homelessness. We have the Veterans Administration. We have Housing and Urban Development. We have the U.S. Department of Education. We have Health and Human Services. And we have the Federal Emergency Management Association. They handle homelessness that happens all at once. When Hurricane Katrina hits, when the fires in Paradise, California happen, when every one of these major things that causes 28,000 people to become homeless overnight, that's FEMA that responds. But and then they shift to each other. So then from there, it's transferred to Housing and Urban Development if people are forever or seemingly forever going to be homeless. But the problem is that all of them have a different definition of homelessness. And the only definition that's even marginally correct is the one for the Department of Education. And the U.S. Department of Education says there are 1.5 million homeless school children in the United States. 1.5 million. If we add their toddler siblings, the teens who have aged out of school, their parents, the elders, all those veterans who may or may not have family that have children, when we add all the other populations of homelessness, we know that the number is closer to 10 million people in the United States that are experiencing homelessness. And that means that when the U.S. Housing and Urban Development says it's 500,000, well, it's off by more than 80%, right?
Yes,
it's off by
95%. Yes. And you know, and the pandemic showed us the flaws in all this reporting as well, because we knew that people who were lucky enough to have a job, they were living paycheck to paycheck. But then when the pandemic hit, we are all seeing now the flaws in the system, because more people mm-hmm. than ever are going hungry and homeless.
Right. And there are, I would say, you know, anecdotally, I kept track of about 1,000 people in my times running shelters. And I kept track of 55% of the people in my shelter had an income. And 30% more over the course of that decade were their children. So 85% of the people in the shelter were the working poor and their kids. So the people experiencing homelessness already have jobs. That's another reason they're not adequately counted. Is because if the Department of Housing and Urban Development goes out to count the homeless folks, and you're at work, you don't get counted.
Yeah.
If you are living in the woods and you don't want the government to know that your children have to live in a tent, you're not going to let them count you.
Yes.
You know, that's absurd. You know. So, and it is much worse to lose your home than to lose your. I mean, much worse to lose your parent than it is to lose your home. At least when you have I had this one woman who came to our shelter, and she was a lovely woman and wonderful. And she had been transported across a few state lines because she was fleeing an abuser. And she had this young man, this boy, he was about 10, her son. And the two of them every night did the ABCs of gratitude. They went from A to Z and found a word they were grateful for that day. Living in a shelter with almost no clothes, he didn't even have a jacket. This 10-year-old boy didn't have a jacket. But they found something to be grateful for, and that has made, he is now a 23-year-old man serving in the United States Coast Guard. He's always been a wonderful guy, because you can still be really well brought up. All of the refugees know this. No matter the adversity, your family can hold you together. And the fact that we have people who don't care that families are separated by a lack of housing is heartbreaking.
Yes. Well, you know, you touch on a really great point, because sometimes people ask the questions, who are the homeless and what mm-hmm. exactly is it? But you hit the nail on the head. They're the working poor. Some people are working and they're still homeless. And you know, I wish, you know, more politicians, more people who are dividing our country using fear and all these things would listen, because we are service-oriented human beings. We're supposed to pass on the wisdom and the knowledge we have to the young ones, so that when our time comes and we get older, we have someone to take care of us. And that's what life is in a nutshell, right? So if you help somebody in a shelter, or you help someone with Medicaid expansion, or you help somebody with affordable housing, or grant them asylum, in the end, they're going to be like that 23-year-old boy and turn around and do something for us.
Right, right. It is. It's literally paying it forward, and then that gets paid forward again. And that's the other thing that's so sad about these politicians that divide and other people that divide is we are loving, wonderful people. The human race is full of love and goodness. And yet in a town called Lewiston, Maine, they have a referendum vote tomorrow night. This is the most amazing vote. The town council will vote not whether or not to have a shelter today, but whether or not to make it illegal to build a shelter in the future. To tie the hands of the future of the town, to make the future of the town cruel. And, you know, the vote last time about this was 4-3, 4 in favor of making it illegal to help in the future and 3 against it. That doesn't mean that all the people of that town are like that. In fact, I've known that town for a long time. I was a broadcaster up that way. Those people are wonderful. This is 4 people with that much power in that town to tie the hands of other town councils going forward to say you can never help. And that's not what the community wants, and it's certainly not even what the council wants.
It makes you want to cry because all major religions teaches you about taking care of the sick and the needy and the poor and those amongst us that need it the most. And yet still, in reality, people's words don't match what's happening on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It's like words do matter, right? But certain people use that conveniently. So
didn't George Carlin say, not in my backyard? Right, wasn't that
his
famous?
Andy is quite big.
Yeah, that's true. But it's almost like we all, you know, you go to work Monday through Friday, and then on Sunday you go to church or temple or synagogue or mosque or whatever, and they teach you about helping others. They teach you about life being a service-oriented life. And then you have a vote like this that's tying the hands of people for the future not to help others. It really doesn't make sense, does it?
No, and you know, it's all fear. And when I talk to people, I try not to make them feel bad about being afraid because fear's already enough of a problem. But if I don't tell myself that people who are experiencing homelessness deserve it, then that means it can happen to me because I don't deserve it either. And so there's all this fear, oh, well, they must want to live that way, or they must have done something wrong, or they must, it can't just be that we have such an enormous gap between the haves and the have-nots in the United States. The gap is ever increasing. It can't be innocent hard work is rewarded with tragedy, because that's what it is. But if I believe that, then my innocent hard work could be rewarded with tragedy.
Right.
And so it's almost like self-preservation to kid yourself into thinking that people have asked for it. Right.
And it's so much judgment, right? It's so much judgment of others that. And those of us who open our hearts and minds and want to learn and get this wisdom and knowledge so we could pass it on to help others, and you sit here and you just grind your teeth because you're like, don't vote on something like that. You're tying people's hands for the future. It's not right, right? So talk to us a little bit about the memorial blanket, the art installation that would be in the Capitol on December 21st, 2022. That is fascinating. I want to know how people could get involved with this blanket that you guys are doing.
Go to memorialblanket.org. There's a place where you can pick your state. We're trying to get all 50 states and all the territories to be involved, memorialblanket.org. And what it is last year, we put a blanket on the ground, 208 handmade blankets, knitted, crocheted, and quilted. Handmade, all of them by total strangers. I put a thing on Facebook that said, we want to make an art installation that shows what it would look like if 208 people were, or however many we could get. I thought if we could get 50, I'd be excited. You know, we're going to show what these blankets will show what it would look like if all those people were laying on the ground and to dramatize homelessness. And Homeless Memorial Night is always December 21st, the winter solstice, the longest night of the year. And that's the night we remember people who die on the street. And a dear friend of mine who was homeless died on Thursday at 7:35 a.m. You know, homelessness cuts your life short on average by 17 years. And so every year we do something. It's usually a candlelight vigil. And last year we thought, no, we're going to show what it would look like. And it was this beautiful art installation. You can see a picture of it at memorialblanket.org. Next day, after we had all these blankets out there, every single one of those blankets was given away to someone who needed a blanket. So it's similar to the AIDS quilt. People have asked me about that because, you know, that was the big art installation in Washington, D.C. But that was folded up and traveled. This one, the next day they're gone. The next day they're wrapped around the shoulders of someone who needed it. The next day they're wrapped around a four-year-old's shoulders. The next day they're thrown over a tent to keep the tent warmer. The next day they're used. And that's really exciting that all of these people would put hundreds of hours of their own time into hand-making a blanket for a total stranger.
Wow.
And that's when the community wasn't divided.
He's telling us we've got a couple more minutes left, and I wanted to get in that you're also an author. So we're going to go to the www.memorialblankets.org, and we'll learn all about that so we could donate blankets as well. But tell us really quick, you're also an author. And we have 2 minutes, if you could just tell us your website and how people can contact, you know, buy your books and stuff.
Okay. I have two publishers. I have a nonprofit publisher for my Priscilla books, which are chapter books for kids from 8 to 80 to learn in a kinder and gentler way about homelessness. It's a four-part series. Actually, we have a new little kid picture book coming out this year, too, in 2022. But so you can get that by going to the PriscillaSeries.com. I wrote a comic book for the first time in my life this year. A pretty famous comic book artist contacted me to write a comic book about a homeless superhero, and we made him a United States veteran because when I ran shelters, it was the U.S. veterans that were uniquely trained to hide, uniquely trained to eat the unedible, uniquely trained to protect others, and they really became the heroes on the street. So we have that. It's in invisiblevet.com. And then my publisher for my other books, my novels and stuff, is Sunbury Press. And my big book on homelessness, the one that's pretty much everything from elder orphans to child homelessness to student homelessness to fires and floods, and that's called Still Left Out in America, and that's available through Sunbury Press. And all the proceeds from my writing help others. Because only a jerk would make money on homelessness. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Pat LaMarche, I would love to have you back on because I know Ellen wanted to get in a few of her Irish jokes and she couldn't. And my granddaughter just read a book about the potato famine or something like that. Mm-hmm. And she was telling me about this potato crisis in Ireland. I'm like, what? She's like, yes, Nanny, haven't you heard about it? So we'll have to have you back on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, Miss Pat LaMarche, journalist, award-winning broadcaster, critically acclaimed author. She's awesome, Ellen.
What a fantastic interview.
Thank you
so much. I think you were on the show one time before, quite a few years ago, but reminding Sita, I was like, it's amazing how years have changed people's focuses and so forth, and yours is just as bright and beautiful as it's always been.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. Hey, it's been great, especially to talk about the memorial blanket, because we hope that we'll cover 9,000 square feet of the Capitol lawn, on the west lawn of the Capitol building in Washington, D.C., and really make an impact.
Awesome. Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much for taking the time to call in, and I will speak to you off air soon, and Ellen will take it from here.
Yeah, fantastic. Pat LaMarche and Angel Perry, thank you so much for joining us today here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And to all of our listeners, tune in each and every Monday here at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on 1510 WWBC, and we'll see you next week.